Politica culturali, Mihai Karsten Schwierer.
Nil-qakom l-ura għal-programm ieħor fis-sensi l-ġdida, il-politika kulturali, Mihai Karsten Schwierer. Kif drajtu għal min diġa sema iż-żewġ sensiliet li għamilna s'issa matul il-ħarifa u x-xitwa ta' 2020 u 21 matul dawn il-programmi kolli numru ta' mistednin ikonna taħdita piuttost informali però nippruvaw naraw ftit kif l-aspett tal-politika kulturali tista' tispandi, tista' tiċċaqlaq f'direzzjonijiet differenti li tħaddan maħħa aspetti varji ta' ħajjitna. Iktar milli approċċ partikolari jew akademiku jew teoretiku biss, per eżempju, nippruvaw nitkellmu ma' esperti li però huma prattiċi ħafna wkoll tal-dinja tagħhom, tal-qafas tagħhom. Kuntent ukoll li ngħid li għal din is-sensiela qed nikkollaboraw ma' Sandro Zerafa, mużiċista, jazz, anke direttor artistiku tal-Jazz Festival li qed tina possibilità nużaw ftit mill-mużika tiegħu mużika jazz rekordjata waqt li hu qed jaħdem u jgħix Pariġi u ta' dan nirringrazzja ħafna. Għall-programm tiegħi llum se naqleb għall-Ingliż kif ġieli nagħmlu għaliex il-mistudenti għaj għalkemm issa jidħla sew ta' Malta u ilu jgħix ftit Malta, qassu tkellmu bl-Ingliż allura naqilbu għall-Ingliż. Today's guest with me for the first program in this new series is Rafael Pasquale Leone. Hello, Rafael.
Hello. Thank you.
Thank you for being on this show, on this renewed adventure of trying to explore cultural policy through various angles. And with you, I'll be chatting a little bit about sort of the relevance, the value of cultural policy from a perspective which takes us to a world we've discussed a bit in the previous series on this show, which is sort of the link between cultural practice, communities, a very sort of bottom-up approach that, however, tries to go beyond sort of protests or activism. Not that there's anything limiting or strong or wrong with that, but in your capacity, having trained and practiced as an architect, hailing from Canada, however, having spent now quite a few years already in Malta working on various projects with different communities, and also being in a position to inform practice and policy, maybe we sort of can also go a little bit into that direction. But just to start off, can you maybe just tell us a little bit of your relationship with Malta, how that came about?
Yes, well, thank you. Thank you again for inviting me to this series. As you said, my background is my first degree was actually in computer science, and then I went on to study architecture. And for me, the common element between those two is design, specifically human-centered design, you know, designing tools and systems that support people's needs.
Yeah. And so in a way, beyond maybe popular understanding of design, again, nothing wrong with that, but what maybe we associate with functional things, just the furniture or just clothes, it's more of an ensemble, a togetherness.
Yeah, there's a phrase that I kind of like, which is that, you know, you design your house, or you design your environment, or rather you form your environment, and thereafter, your environment forms you, right? So there's a dialectical relationship between ourselves and our cultural, you know, environment of artifacts, whether it be the tools that we use, or our homes or our public space, etc.
Yes. So in a way, I presume the various changes you've witnessed and you've practiced various changes between Canada.
Yes.
And where your formative years were based, and then your practice in other places, including Malta.
Yes, definitely. It's been extremely interesting. I arrived in Malta just over 4 years ago for personal reasons. My then partner got a job here, so we moved here together. And I found I loved it. And I also recognized that it was totally the opposite of Canada. So it was very different in many different ways, good and bad. And so it was a really interesting process for me to, you know, engage critically and with trying to understand why things are the way they are, and also trying to engage with the frustrations mm-hmm. that one mm-hmm. experiences when one is new in a place. During that, my first year in Malta, I worked in various places. I worked at an architecture firm at Studio Urban. I worked in mm-hmm. a number of mm-hmm. other settings.
Yeah. We've had Antoine Zami previously.
Yes.
From Studio Urban on the show.
Yeah. And then, a year after arriving, I got a job, at the Valletta Design Cluster. And,
Could you briefly, just for the benefit of our listeners, say what that is actually? I mean, even at the time of speaking, it's in its infancy. So maybe not many people actually know about it.
So it's a project that the moment I heard about it, I recognized that this was something I want to be a part of. It involves the adaptive reuse of a 400-year-old slaughterhouse, you know, a piece of urban infrastructure that had fallen into irrelevance and dilapidation.
Oh, disrepair.
Yeah, this is in Lower Valletta.
Yeah. It's what is also known in Vicheria.
Il Vicheria Antica, yes. Yeah. And what, one thing that's interesting about it is it's located on the site of the only freshwater spring of Valletta. And as you can imagine, you know, a riverless, you know, piece of land that's prone to siege, to have this mm-hmm, mm-hmm, life-giving mm-hmm. source of sustenance and industry on the site. That's a very special thing.
Very important.
Yeah, so...
So you got involved in that, Rafael, I know, through various ways.
Yeah.
Not only through your architectural background and formation, but also through other means.
Yes, I mean
because that is one thing which strikes me about you. So there's many levels where design somehow can reach out to people and somehow make them aware that there is a lot to be done. You mentioned good, bad, also suffering sometimes our environment, and sometimes one feels a bit helpless that one just suffers the onslaught of development, for example, without being really part of it and active. But you see ways not only around that but actually working through that.
Absolutely. I mean, I think what's really compelling to me about adaptive reuse, which is what that project is, it's taking a building that had fallen into disrepair and irrelevance and injecting it with a new meaning, a new purpose. What's really exciting to me is that it is, you know, it involves a process of sifting through oneself and basically sifting through what one has and kind of filtering what part of this is still working for me or for us and what part of this can we let go of, right? So it's interesting. I got that job with the design cluster at just around the same time that my relationship had fallen apart. And it was poignant for me to see how life and creativity and growth is really the art of how to repair mm-hmm. out of rupture, like how to take a breakdown and turn it into a breakthrough, right?
Ah, That's interesting, because it really happens in life. Lots of,
it does.
As the Chinese proverb goes, of crisis in reality can be a moment for opportunity.
Exactly. And that's how, you know, ecology works, right? In the natural world, the end of something or the death or decay of something is not something to be ashamed of. At its best, that is kind of digested, and the seeds or the kind of assets that are within that get recycled into the next iteration of life.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting you mentioned the environmental dimension, which is one of the main topics, I would say, of discussion, not only in the cultural field, but in all fields. It's because you relate sort of what is maybe natural with what is man-made and more urban. And around us, I'm speaking of a Maltese context, but not exclusively, there seems to be a big break, detaching of what is natural, in a way external to us, and then how humanity intervenes by somehow giving value. And sometimes there's the feeling of being almost on polar opposites rather than together.
Yes. I mean, I think, let me say one thing that really surprised me when I arrived in Malta is I had this idea, this assumption, a kind of a utopian assumption that Malta was, as a small island, I envisioned it as a closed system that would almost inevitably develop and embrace very sustainable practices. So in my mind, everything would kind of, you know, have this elegant closed loop. And there are examples of that. Like, for example, when Valletta was built, the practice was that one would not import stone to the construction site. Rather, one would excavate stone on site, build the building with that, and the cavity left over would become the cistern to collect the rainwater. For me, that's so elegantly beautiful. And so, you know, vernacular architecture and practices in Malta have a lot of that. However, obviously, Malta is not a closed system. And, you know, with colonialism and with this huge injection of money from the EU, things do not always work that way. And I feel like often, you know, in modern times, there has been the temptation to just bring in something new and kind of throw away the old. And in a way, I find that it's really a strange fit that a country as small as Malta often seems to not necessarily engage with obsolescence or brokenness, both in terms of architecture and also in terms of human relations. Sometimes it seems, at least, that way. You know, I mean, to consider the number of old hotels around Malta in super picturesque locations that are just abandoned, and the number of military bases and fortifications, and often these occupy very strategic, very powerful positions.
But
rather than, you know, finding ways to kind of pivot their function and make them, you know, re-engage them into contemporary life, it often seems, at least, like they're just lost in limbo.
Yeah, Rafael, I'll just stop you there for a second, because we'll just have a breather, basically.
Yeah.
Get back to Santo Zarafa's music, just a few seconds, and then get back to this point you're mentioning about the strategic value, even over time, of certain places, because I know you've been involved in a number of projects of this.
Thank you.
mela nħallu ftit dik il-mużika ta' Sandro Serafamek biex niġlu la konverzazzjoni li għandi l-lum ma' Rafael Pasqual Leone li huwa perit mill-Kanada illi nitkellem ftit miegħu dwar proġetti vari u perspettiva ftit holistika ta' kif l-ambjent u n-natura jistgħu forsi f'xi mod f'moħħna ikunu iktar imwaħda ma' l-operat urban. Tana. Rafael, what I was saying just now was sort of in this attempt to try to bring things together. And I know you're a great practitioner at doing this, working with people, working with communities, sort of getting a feel of the lay of the land, literally speaking. And I know in preparing for this program, for example, you mentioned to me the Cotonera example, which is one of many which locally really put us on the spot of having so much in terms of heritage, but honestly speaking, doing so little with it, apart from cleaning it up and then waiting for the next maybe round of EU funds to do the same. What has your experience taught you about what else should be going on?
Yeah, so the Cotonera lines for me are an example of a very exciting opportunity because, you know, when we look at Malta, it's full of this military infrastructure mm-hmm. that in its day was very strategic. And a really deep restoration would involve not only restoring the cosmetic appearance of a place, but also restoring that fundamental sense of purposefulness, right? So the Cotonera lines, as some of your listeners may know, is 350 years old as of last year, and it separates the Cotonera from Fura and Paula, and it was considered the most ambitious fortifications built by the knights. Obviously, it was designed to prevent people from getting into the Cotonera, which made it an environment which is not very hospitable to cars. But the flip side of that is that it is a paradise. It can become a paradise for pedestrians. And the top of the Cotonera lines, the top of the walls, is wide enough that it could be a wonderful linear promenade that can connect the various schools and heritage functions that line the walls, almost like an emerald necklace. So a place with touristic value, kind of social value.
Yes, recreation.
Yeah, mental health, a perfect place for elderly and children to look at the stars and watch fireworks, listen to birds. And so that's something that I find very exciting, to take something, a latent asset, something that has value which is not being tapped into, doing a strategic intervention and tapping into the invisible forces that mm-hmm. that exist in the environment, specifically mm-hmm. the need for green space, the need yeah. for peace and quiet and mental yeah. health and physical yeah. activity.
Rafael, I know that when you work in this field, yeah. you don't do so, say, from books or from laptops or from sitting at a desk and just coming up with nice ideas. You actually run workshops, you consult with people, you get asked to be part or lead actually workshops. So I wonder whether many times sort of we blame finances or lack of political will or maybe other priorities take over sort of with certain difficulties in going on with maybe other types of projects and prioritizing say projects as you suggest. What's the feedback you get though from people you work with community members, with people at all levels really of the decision making process?
Yeah, well, yeah, you know, there's a metaphor that I kind of like when it comes to interventions, and I call it the rocket versus the kite. And the rocket approach for an intervention, whether it be physical or otherwise, is you spend a lot of money. It's kind of the brute force approach. And if it takes off, it's just because of, you know, all the resources you've thrown at it. The kite approach is it's more lightweight. It's more playful. It's more fast. And if it takes off, it's because it successfully taps into those invisible forces at work. And, you know, in the case of a placemaking exercise like the Cotonera lines, those invisible forces you hear those from the people you talk to. People want to have a place for their children to play. They want to do urban gardening. They want to walk their dogs. And I think it's a very healthy way for decisions to be made, to listen and to engage and to have that fertile kind of dialectical, iterative conversation. Yes.
We've seen many examples over maybe the last, especially, you know, 20, 30 years, even around the Mediterranean, even in coastal areas, even in small, dense places like Malta. So sometimes I think we tend to suffer from some feeling that we're so unique that there's only one way of dealing with urban pressures in Malta, which is build more and occupy space on the sea and go down and go up. I don't know, within the last few minutes, because we're at the end of our program already, what would you say is our future? We seem to have missed the boat on a certain few things, but what may the next few years or decades is going to bring?
I think participatory approaches are really key, right? Listening to populations that are going to be impacted by decisions, and letting some of the brilliance of the designs emerge from there. For example, at the Valletta Design Cluster, the green roof, which is one of like the the key features that emerged through a community unconference, a community consultation. That
wasn't part of an unconference or something unconference. Too structured, but a conference which is a bit more or very informal.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, really, design is about power, because you are changing. Design involves changing the world. So that, the way in which that is done has implications with respect to equality. And I think it's a good way to go, to engage with communities and acknowledge and respond to the needs that people have and the strengths that the context offers, rather than always kind of assuming that the good stuff comes from elsewhere. I kind of like the metaphor also of how pearls are made. Like, a pearl is made by taking an irritant, a problem, and engaging with it until it becomes a beautiful asset. And there are lots of things, both tangible and intangible, in Malta, a lot of irritants, a lot of problems that can similarly benefit from critical and creative engagement and entrepreneurial engagement in order to produce something of benefit to Malta and possibly beyond.
I found this exchange very, very interesting, Rafa, and I hope, and I'm sure our listeners will have too, in the context also of other conversations we've had on the show and the general conversation going on in the country. Because sometimes, sort of, as I said, we get caught up in a little bit of a bubble mentality. Although the Maltese travel and study abroad and are very connected, virtually but also physically, what's happening around us. Somehow there is like a suspension, not of disbelief in this case, but a suspension of belief that other ways are possible. And I think you clearly, especially in your conclusion, said that somehow if design empowers and then also allows different visions to be opened up, then changes can be made on that basis, because it's the community people themselves who are proposing them.
Yeah, I mean, like I was saying in the beginning, there's a mirroring between the design of our environment and our systems and our culture and kind of relationships of power that exist in our culture. Mm-hmm. And, any sustainable ecosystem, involves not only the big trees, but also the small bushes and the small stuff. And I think there are lots of communities, whether it be the elderly or children or newcomers, that too often are not paid attention to.
Yes, and I think it's also a matter of recognizing those sort of diverse elements.
Yeah.
If it's the trees or the bushes. Mm-hmm. And sometimes even from a policy perspective, something I experience, and something I also sort of sometimes perpetrate, this sort of pigeonholing people into particular characters, even though for the ease of talking, we're saying people with a disability, the elderly, children. Sometimes so policymakers need to realize that people are more than one person at the same time, and they shift in and out of jobs, and that maybe people today depend on their cars too much to get to work. But they are not only commuters. They have kids, they have elderly parents. What do you do the rest of the time when you're not driving to work?
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a really interesting point. I mean, about driving all the time, you know, we talked earlier about how a lot of kind of creation has to do with healing, how to get over kind of obstacles and roadblocks. And often people kind of, they develop these coping mechanisms. And sometimes as circumstances change, people cling to their coping mechanisms when in fact they benefit from really letting go. And I think with the car-centered aspect of Malta, which in my experience, I think is one of the worst, most multifacetedly harmful parts of Malta today. That, in my opinion, calls for a paradigm shift.
Rafael, thank you very much for being with me on the show today. Ringrazio Rafael Pasqualeone Perit, Canada, ilu però Malta sa numru ta' snin li qasam magħna ftit dawk l-idea fuq politika kulturali u anke d-diżen u l-ispazji urbani tagħna. Nisit inkonkunu magħna għall-programm ieħor fis-silsila fil-politika kulturali il-ġimgħa d-dieħla. Grazzi kulħadd.